This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic.
Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no,
that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
How many new clothing items do you reckon you buy every month, every year? Some figures have suggested we're buying more clothes per person than any other country. In the last few years, we've surpassed America as the world's biggest consumer of textiles per capita. So, does Australia have a fast fashion addiction problem? And could reselling our clothes more help with that? Hey, it's Angel Parsons with you for Hack. I'm filling in for Dave Marchese, and today we're talking about the rise of clothing resale apps in Australia.
I mean, I'm always sourcing. Any moment of my life, I buy things. Any day, any moment. I'm always on the hunt. It's just like in my DNA now.
Yeah, if you use these platforms, I'd love to know what your experience is. Like, do you prefer shopping and selling on sites like Depop and Vinted rather than heading to an op shop? Or do you still love in-person thrifting? You can text in on 0439 757 555. Also coming up, how a youth-led protest movement in India has achieved what many thought would be impossible. But first,
this is Hack.
The surveillance will be used to detect people across the state, including those who are wanted or missing.
On Triple J.
How would you feel about the police having the power to track you, to scan faces in a crowd and identify people in real time? I'm not talking about CCTV. I'm talking about AI-powered facial recognition technology, because it's now being trialled by police in Western Australia. So would that make you feel safer, or do you feel like it's a bit of an invasion of privacy? You can let me know on 0439 757 555. You'll hear from an expert soon who can break down how this tech works and what it means. But first, Jackson Worthington has been out and about in Perth asking people what they think.
100%, I think there's a case of sort of police overreach.
As long as that facial scan doesn't go anywhere else, I'm all cool with it.
I mean, keeps everyone a bit safer overall. I don't see much issue with it.
I'm out on the streets of Perth asking people how they feel about WA police trying facial recognition technology.
Doesn't sound like a bad thing, really. Just scanning criminals and, you know, tracking them down, stuff like that.
For safety, sure. No worries, but I just don't want my face to go anywhere else.
All right, let me explain what's going on. For the past month, WA police have been trialling this new surveillance tech. As part of the trial, a van marked with a facial recognition technology sign has been surveying areas around Perth, with police officers on hand to answer questions. WA Police Commissioner Cole Blanch says it's less invasive than CCTV.
If you are not one of the 4,000 people in our community with an arrest warrant, if you are not on a child sex offender list or on an exclusion order, then your information is not stored. It is deleted immediately. The operator cannot see your face. It is a piece of technology that is specifically designed to protect the privacy of most West Australians doing the absolute right thing, enjoying their day across our community.
This tech works by scanning faces. It's searching for a set group of about 4,000 people who have outstanding warrants or are registered sex offenders. WA police say they don't store the data collected, and officers inside the van unable to see the faces of people being scanned. In the first week of the trial, police scanned more than 131,000 faces across Perth, leading to 33 alerts and 19 arrests. Police also engaged with 21 registered sex offenders identified by the technology.
Having 33 alerts go off, about half and half arrest warrants and child sex offenders, in my view, it's 33 alerts that we wouldn't have ordinarily known about. To have half of those people in custody as a result of those arrest warrants, as a police officer, I think for a community, I think that is a success.
There was even an arrest during the press conference to announce the results.
I'd love to say I planned that, but I think that's exactly what the technology is. People are being arrested because they are wanted.
The first week of the trial also resulted in two false alerts. The police commissioner says there's a human in the loop to prevent bad outcomes.
A human looks at the match. A human makes the decision. A human engages that person and asks relevant questions.
But experts are concerned about what this could mean for privacy going forward. WA's Office of the Information Commissioner is monitoring the trial but was not part of any formal consultation process, saying in a statement that the use of facial recognition technology can have safety benefits but also significant privacy risks that need to be eliminated or mitigated.
The police commissioner has said this is not about mass surveillance, this is about sort of targeted search for people of interest to the police. I think it's interesting because both can be true.
UWA law lecturer Anna Zenz is worried police are subjecting people to mass surveillance.
It can be for the purpose of targeted searches, but I think we cannot deny that the sort of tech that's used is indiscriminatorily subjecting the public to surveillance.
She's worried police haven't outlined what will make this trial successful and haven't ruled out using this tech in other scenarios in the future, like at protests.
Function creep is something that we've seen historically when new technologies and especially surveillance technologies are being adopted.
Okay, so what do the people in Perth think about all this? Well, there's really two camps. On one side, there's people who aren't bothered as long as it makes the community safer.
I mean, the reality is all of us have got phones now anyway. They all use Face ID. It's not really something that's private anymore.
I've never seen anything like it, but like, I don't mind it. I guess there's a purpose behind it.
And on the other, people who are worried about their privacy.
Being surveillanced all the time, it's inhumane.
They have that much power. It's like, why would they not want to keep that information just in case they can use it for their benefit?
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there. And on the text line, people are pretty divided about this. Someone saying, I'm not okay with facial recognition technology. Someone else saying, what are you all hiding from with this technology? Up to no good? Look, there are a lot of views on this and, you know, a lot of concerns as well about what this trial in WA could mean for how this tech is used in other parts of Australia one day. With us to unpack this more now is Lauren Perry. She's the Responsible Technology Policy Specialist at the University of Technology, Sydney. Lauren, thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Yeah, great to be here.
We've just been hearing about WA police using facial recognition. I mean, firstly, what do you make of this trial?
Yeah, this is a pretty big turning point for Australia in terms of the use of both facial recognition technology on citizens, but also its use by police and law enforcement. So up until now, we have seen police around Australia use facial recognition, but in a retrospective way. So recording people's faces and using it later on to match against databases and find people of interest. What makes this particular case different in WA is that this trial is using live facial recognition on people in the community. So they're able to identify faces in real time and use that information to make arrests.
And when we talk about turning points and, you know, one part of society using technology, we often hear this term surveillance creep when we talk about this. Can you explain what is surveillance creep and how worried are you about it?
Yeah, surveillance creep, or sometimes we call it function creep as well, is a really big concern to me. Essentially, what it means is that, you know, an organisation or, you know, the police force or an individual might start using a technology for one purpose. So let's say in this context, it's to identify people of real significant threats to the community. But with something like surveillance creep, you see that slow increase of the technology being permeated into other use cases that we perhaps might not feel that comfortable about. But once it's started to be used on us, it's much, much harder to say no and to be rolled back. So, for example, police might, you know, start using it for people who pose a national security threat. But once the technology is started to be used, they go, okay, well, maybe we'll start using it on, you know, to find people who have parking infringements or speeding fines. And slowly we see that creep of the technology across the community.
And if we can talk about like the tech itself, facial, like AI-driven facial recognition technology, what is the difference between that and, say, something like CCTV that, you know, has been around in shopping centres and public spaces for quite a long time now?
Yeah, it's a good question because a lot of people sort of say, oh, look, we've had CCTV. Is facial recognition that different? But I think there are some really key differences for people to think about. So CCTV is more of a passive recording, whereas facial recognition is an active identification. So what I mean by that is that CCTV, it's sort of a always on, you know, in a shopping centre. It's recording footage passively, but it requires a human operator to watch the live feed back, Whereas when you have facial recognition technology that's applied via automated algorithms to a live camera feed, it actively captures individual faces in the recording, and it's done in real time. So, you know, the risks of error are much higher. The lack of transparency or thoughtfulness around decision making is also a key factor in that. So you can sort of understand that the risks to our privacy and rights are much greater.
This is Hack. I'm Angel Parsons. I'm talking to Lauren Perry, a responsible technology policy specialist at UTS. One of the big concerns that I hear is the intention might be to pursue justice or catch shoplifters. But Lauren, is there a history of this technology actually leading to injustices, racial profiling, for example?
Yeah, there's actually a few different risks here that can kind of come into play. So firstly, there's the risk of bias or discrimination in the technology itself. So historically, we've seen that facial recognition actually works less effectively for people of colour, people who are older, and women as well. And I guess while we do have some rules that govern how facial recognition is used, police actually have a lot of exemptions from those rules, particularly from our Privacy Act, which means they can use the technology more than other sort of organisations can. But there's a real need to have safeguards in place when that's happening. I should sort of clarify from the outset, Australia does not have dedicated facial recognition laws. Our privacy laws, which provide us the most protections from these technologies, were created in the 1980s prior to connection to the internet, sort of let alone the proliferation of AI and facial recognition. So it's definitely not fit for purpose in our digital data-driven age.
It's really interesting to hear your insights. Lauren Perry, Responsible Technology Policy Specialist at UTS. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack today.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
And on the text line, someone's saying, on the one hand, I like the idea of safety and catching these people, but then monitoring people in public is a little creepy. That's what someone says there. Someone else saying, I back this. The police cannot keep up with the criminals at this point. Someone else, though, saying, I think over-reliance on AI tech is a bad thing in general. Another person saying, it's fine if you have a well-meaning, ethical democracy going, but look how fast that can change, like in the USA. Better not to risk it, is that person's view there. Right, we're going to move on.
Hack.
Across India, thousands of people take to the streets.
On Triple J.
How much power do young people have when it comes to protesting, to calling for change from governments? We've just seen a huge show of force from young people in India who want accountability for what they call a failed education system. The Cockroach Junta Party has been making international headlines for the past few months. And it all stems back to the leak of India's National Medical Entrance Exam. The leak forced a retest, it affected millions of students, and the party says it led to some students' suicides. Well, after weeks of protests, the Indian Education Minister has now resigned. Tavleen Singh is a journalist with the ABC who's been covering this movement. Tavleen, thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
How significant and rare is this moment for the Education Minister to have resigned?
It is incredibly rare and a remarkable moment, Angel. I think we haven't seen the BJP government in this situation before. They've been in power for 12 years and have had a free reign over the country. And to see them forced into a situation when one of the cabinet ministers, the education minister, Dharmendra Pradhan, was forced to resign after weeks of protests in the capital city, Delhi, is very rare. It's very significant. And it shows us that there might be some parts of India and the government that will be reviewing this moment and thinking, do they need to do things differently? I don't think a lot of people expected this to happen. Now, I recall at the start of this movement of CJP, Cockroach Janata Party, where I spoke with people who would be going to these protests or volunteering for this protest or in this movement, and they were like, we are not sure if it will happen, but at this time, we have nothing else to lose, and we are frustrated, and we just want to do this. So to see it happen now is pretty significant. second.
It's really interesting, the rise of this cockroach junta party. So can we talk about that? Yeah, like how much was social media, for example, a part of the success of this movement?
Yeah, so the main root cause, of course, was the frustration that Indian students and youth were feeling with the education system. But it actually all began on social media. So it was the Chief Justice of India, who's Suryakant, he made some comments in a hearing which mentioned along the lines of saying that the Indian youth was cockroaches. Now, that's not the exact line, but he basically referred to the youth as cockroaches. And one man, a 30-year-old person sitting in the United States, thought, oh, that's funny, he's calling us cockroaches. And he made a meme out of it. He didn't expect it to become so big. And he talked about how he woke up one morning and saw how many followers he had. And a lot of people were messaging him saying, you have now the attention of the youth, please do something with it.
And the movement has support here in Australia too. Like, what have you heard from Indian Australians and how they feel about all of this?
Yes, of course, we know that there's a big diaspora here of India, the Indian community, and not only in Melbourne, but also in Sydney, there were protests in support, in solidarity of the protests taking place. And there was one, a very young person, a 20-something female who I spoke with, and I asked her why she's protesting, and she could relate to the frustration that the youth in India was facing, particularly with the examination system, because a lot of the students, international students who go to Canada, to US, to UK, and come here even in Australia, it's not that they want to leave their own country, it's because they're pursuing better opportunities and a better education system.
What do you think happens now for the cockroach junta party? Like, do the protesters keep going? Are there other measures that they're calling for besides what's happened now, which is the resignation of the education minister?
Angel, that's so interesting, right? Like, what happens next? Because I was wondering the same thing. The moment that notification came on my phone that the Indian education minister has resigned, I started going on WhatsApp and looking through the chat groups I had going. And one of them was actually with a couple of spokespeople from the Cockroach Janta Party. And my first message to them was, of course, congratulations. But then was, what happens next? Are you guys done now? And they sent me a message, and this is a message that they have now posted on their social media as well as on their official website, that they are not done. They're far from done. The main goal was the resignation of the Indian Education Minister, which has happened, but they also had a secondary ask, which was that students who allegedly have been reported as having died after the examination leaks have been reported in state media in that way. They want that their families be compensated for the fact that the examination was cancelled and that it played a part allegedly in the students committing suicide.
It's a really heavy issue to be talking about, and something obviously so many people really care about, and it has driven this protest movement. And, you know, a few weeks ago in Australia, we saw Narendra Modi arrive in Australia and meet with Anthony Albanese, and there were protesters but also supporters flocking to the streets to get a glimpse. So a lot of people living here in Australia would be wondering, how do you think this whole protest movement is going to affect the Modi government going forward now?
I think we're already seeing the signs. The first one is the fact this resignation took place at all. But there are other changes we are now noticing. So Prime Minister Modi, he's never done a press conference in India, yet he is extremely popular. And like you mentioned, he's both loved and hated. He's also one of the few leaders who has such a massive fan base online. And what we've seen in these last few days alone, particularly when this movement was at its peak, was him talking directly to Gen Z. He's already trying to connect to the youth of India. And there's been reports in Indian media that are suggesting that he's asked his cabinet to be more active online on X as well as on Instagram in a bid to connect more to the youth of the country. So they're definitely taking this resignation and this CJP movement a bit more seriously than they did at the start.
Wow, it's so fascinating and so good to hear your insights. Tavleen Singh, ABC journalist, thank you so much for joining us on Hack today and unpacking it with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Angel.
You're listening to Hack.
I've got very mixed feelings about Depop.
On Triple J.
Yeah, do you use a secondhand clothing app? I'm thinking Depop, The RealReal, ThredUp. They're designed to help you get rid of the clothes you're not wearing, which can help reduce landfill. But the good comes with the bad, some saying they've been taken advantage of on these platforms. So I'd love to hear from you about your experience with these sites. You can text in on 0439 757 555. A new secondhand app has dropped in Australia recently, and another has slashed its sellers' fees to keep up with competition. Millie Roberts has been looking into it.
I've been like buying t-shirts here and there for my boyfriend so he doesn't feel left out and he's okay with packages coming nearly every day.
Jess, a secondhand shopper from Sydney, reckons most of her wardrobe is pre-loved, and while that used to involve sifting through clothes racks at op shops, about 5 years ago, her thrifting habit moved online.
Benefits, obviously, circular fashion. I think especially if you do want to buy those cheaper things, just buying it secondhand, like, it's obviously better for the environment.
Jess is one of millions of people worldwide using clothing resale apps to buy and sell secondhand, locally or even overseas.
For me, it's more like a time thing. I don't want to spend 8 hours on a Saturday or a Sunday going between stores and driving all around Sydney in bad traffic.
Depop is one of the most popular clothing resale apps for Gen Zs and millennials in Australia. Lillian was an early adopter and says it's become a big source of income.
I mean, I'm always sourcing. Any moment of my life, I'm looking at, I buy things. Any day, any moment. I'm always on the hunt. It's just like in my DNA now.
She buys from op shops and flea markets and resells on Depop. And as a lifelong thrifter, she reckons this setup means she gets paid to do what she loves.
And I think that what we are providing is actually this like easy access to stuff that is still so much cheaper than it would be buying brand new.
Depop was owned by Etsy and acquired by eBay earlier this year. But now the online thrifting pool has widened. Competitor Vinted, a UK-based marketplace app, has just launched in Australia. It's not just these two. There's a bunch now. And Lillian says there's pressure to keep across them all.
I think like the saturation of the industry is potentially the outcome will be more work for us as a seller and like just maybe like it will just make things more complicated. So I'm not super excited about it.
Jess has decided to switch over.
I bought a pair of Prada heels for $50 free shipping that arrived 2 days ago. A pair of jeans came yesterday. I think like 5 or 6 things have come.
But like with anything on the internet, online shopping can be risky. Jake reckons he was scammed on his first Depop purchase.
My fiance uses it all the time. It's almost like a social media for her. So she sells things on there. She buys by the kilo. So I decided to buy something on there.
He thought he bought a pair of Levi's, but a knockoff showed up in the mail instead. When he filed a complaint, Jake says the seller went on a DM tirade, even leaving Jake a bad review.
And by that point, I said to him, like, are you threatening me now?
After being refunded, Jake thought it was over until a stranger reached out to say they'd been swindled by the same guy. Despite a bunch of people reporting the user, his account is still up.
And it seems like Depop doesn't really have the infrastructure to deal with this stuff.
A Depop spokesperson says it takes the safety of its users extremely seriously and has multiple levels of protection to detect scams or sus behaviour. And it's not just Depop getting caught up in the dark side of the internet. Vinted has also come under fire for alleged child trafficking listings, which, it says, investigations have shown no credible evidence for. While the industry is far from perfect, Lillian says resale apps have cultivated something unique and special for her.
Genuinely not been to like a doof in the last like 2 years where I haven't seen at least 2 or 3 people that are wearing stuff they've bought from me. And like that's always so fun because I'm like, you know, it's very cool to know that like the people that are buying from me are like-minded.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Millie Roberts reporting there, and we're going to get into this a bit more now. Maggie Zhao is fashion editor at large at Broadsheet and co-host of the Culture Club podcast, and she joins us now. Hi, Maggie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to talk to you. When we talk about shopping habits and how they've changed over the years, I'm curious to get your take about how much do you reckon that these apps have changed the way we're shopping?
Look, I think it comes in tandem with just the rise and rise
rise of online shopping. I think they can't really be separated, these two things, and I think they do actually fuel each other. So many of us now are familiar with that shopping process online and having parcels rock up at your door, and having these apps mimic that and continue that process is very familiar to people.
And as we just heard in the package there, another app has just launched here in Australia. I mean, how big of a deal is that?
Yeah, this has been massive news. Vinted launched at the start of July here in Australia, and prior to that, you couldn't buy for them. For reference, they are one of the biggest kind of resale platforms, especially over in Europe. So it feels like now Australia is part of that global fashion conversation that in some ways we are left out of just because we are so far away. I think especially when we're looking at these resale markets, it is harder to be part of these resale conversations, literally just because of how pricey shipping is. We're not even throwing different taxes into the equation. It can just be really costly. That's why we have kind of been siloed, especially in Australia, and buying from each other.
Can you correlate, the rise of these kind of thrifting apps with changing kind of attitudes towards fast fashion? Like, are we seeing a move away from fast fashion, or is this kind of more of just a niche community who are getting into resale apps?
I wish I could say, yes, we're all moving away from fast fashion, but that definitely is not the case. The more figures we see and the more stats we see about Australians' buying habits, we're seeing that we are still indeed buying so much fast fashion, and that isn't slowing down. I think that this is still applaudable, the fact that a lot of us are buying more secondhand clothing, but I don't think it is replacing our desire to buy fast fashion. If I'm being honest, I would kind of like to look at this conversation more broadly and look at our consumerism habits in general. I think a lot of us are guilty of overconsumption, whether that is for new or secondhand clothes.
Are there concerns that these apps could be taking money and business away from op shops, which, are traditionally charities?
I don't work in the op shop sphere, so I can imagine that there are different opinions in that space. But last I've seen, only about 10 to 20% of clothing at op shops on the floor actually gets sold. A lot of it gets sent to landfill, gets sent overseas. It's not great. I don't think we are necessarily taking business away from op shops. I do think that the secondhand market in Australia is there's an excess of stock.
We also heard in that story from someone who might have been scammed. I'm wondering, has this ever happened to you, or do you come across this in your reporting at all?
Oh, touch wood, has not happened to me yet, but I do know of friends who have been scammed, and it's usually actually when it comes to payment, especially if they're the one selling something, right? And a potential buyer comes through saying that they've sent the money over, but oh, you have to just like click through this link or sign up to this payment platform to receive that money. They've popped in their details and then their money has been taken. So I would be very wary of anybody who tries to wreck you off platform. Keep those transactions in those apps.
Vinted and Depop and Facebook Marketplace, like, all kind of face these accusations of dodgy listings and potential scammers. Do you think these apps are doing enough to protect consumers?
I think this is a really tricky one because the way that these platforms operate, we're working with one-of-one items, we're working with casual sellers, casual buyers, these aren't established businesses. It can be so difficult to kind of monitor everything. A lot of these platforms are putting things in place. eBay now has this buyer protection program where like there's this built-in price at the buyers pay, and that helps with customer support, risk monitoring, fraud detection, etc. And Depop have a protection thing, but that's only if the sellers are using their Depop branded shipping labels. Vinted also have a buyer protection fee that's baked in. And these are great initiatives, and I do think we're on the right path. I think it's just so hard when there's so many transactions a day that things will definitely slip through the cracks.
Maggie Zhao, fashion editor at large at Broadsheet and co-host of the Culture Club podcast. Thank you so much for jumping onto Hack and giving us your take. It's really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
And on the text line, Lee in in Canberra says, I feel like we have a clothing quality issue in Australia. I've lived elsewhere and the thrifting there is better. The items you buy last way longer and look good for longer. Someone else saying, I got scammed on Depop the first time I tried to sell on there. Someone else saying, the platform fees are outrageous. That is all we have time for on Hack.